9 at Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with music and the truth until dawn. Right now, I've got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. It's 12 o'clock, Americans, another day closer to victory. And for all of you out there on or behind the lines, this is your song.
You are now listening to the Patriot Power Hour, flagship show of the Patriot Broadcasting Network, a radio station focused on growing indomitable all-American 21st century liberty. This live episode of the Patriot Power Hour is brought to you by Ready-Made Resources. Plan, prepare, preserve with ReadyMadeResources.com. Now, let's welcome our hosts. Ben, the breaker of banksters, Cochran, and Future Dan, the editor-in-chief of the most original news radar on the planet, FutureDanger.com.
Patriot Power Hour, back in your life, episode 61, the season finale of all things. Thanks for joining us. July 1st, 2019, Ben, the breaker of banksters, here with my co-host, Future Dan of FutureDanger.com. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Ben. This is the last one of this season. Episode 61. Can't wait to do it.
Well, we're doing it. We're already in. We got to get going quick because we got a lot to talk about. And as I said, season finale, we will be off next week. And be prepared for some new additions to Patriot Power Hour. Upon our return, just check out our social media and page and various outlets that we have, etc., to see when our next, keep track of when our next season starts, I suppose. But without further ado, let's finish this season strong. One of our most intensive seasons, I think, actually. A lot of stuff starting to pick up here as we actually just crossed the halfway point of 2019. Pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah, sure is. So a lot of the early spring, it was hard to talk about some topics on Patriot Power. We had nothing, but summer's roiling us, and overseas as well. The president just went to North Korea, first president to ever do it, walked across the DMZ spontaneously after the G20 summit. I don't see that as necessarily a good thing or a bad thing at the moment. It's hard to read the direction it goes, but I do have a view that this could be relatively more destabilizing than you might think. So picture a line chart, if you will, and on the vertical axis is destabilization, and on the horizontal axis is good destabilization and bad. This thing has got kind of a horseshoe shaped curve to it. It could end up being really good and really maybe put peace in the Korean Peninsula. Meanwhile, though, it could go the other way and destabilize the region or worldwide. It could be a pivot point towards what might end up being a war. So there's no real middle ground, and Trump probably instinctively knows this and went anyways.
Getting flashbacks to calculus. And like, I think there's asymmetric curves.
And part of this is because what's going on in Hong Kong simultaneously.
Well, exactly. This is obviously one little thread in a huge,
the Chinese government's pressured by both Trump in Korea and protesters encouraged by that.
This is poking them on the other side.
Take over the Hong Kong elective body's legislative chamber at the time of this airing of episode 61. They've occupied it. And this is something I was an adult when Tiananmen Square happened, just barely, but I remember it. And this sort of standing up to the government hasn't happened since they ran people over with tanks.
Go back to episode 59 of Patriot Power Hour, just a couple few weeks ago. Check out episode 59, Patriot Power Hour. Again, our archive, blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network, or you can find it on FutureDanger.com. In episode 59, we talked about Hong Kong protests for at least 5 minutes, maybe a solid 10 minutes, and that was sort of the infancy, but things are starting to pick up big time.
It's not stopping.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's kind of ebb and flow. It has, you know, it had a little break, but nothing was resolved, and they're coming back stronger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a bull market in protest. Let's say that.
Now, they might be able to get the Hong Kong street protesters to just let the crowd dispel, like has happened in riot conditions in the United States.
That's what they want. They want to slowly boil the frog with regard to the police state, surveillance state, extradition to China. That's what a lot of this is about. They don't want a flash point. They don't want people to wake up quickly to injustices. They want it to just go along. People slowly get acclimated to it. And so that's what they want, but it doesn't look like they're going to get that. I'm not sure. You mean
Chinese government is the thing?
Exactly. They want to kind of cool things and maybe slow their roll a little bit, but it might be too late. It might have already hit critical mass.
Well, there's a lot of dynamics in that government going on right now, and the People's Liberation Army is always going to be leaning towards, we're ready to knock this down violently.
Yeah, it's true. They
before
don't
it gets
have
out
much,
of hand.
Yeah, they don't have very soft gloves, if you know what I mean. Like, they're trying to hold back, but at some point, you would expect them to snap in.
So, riots in China. Chinese civil unrest. It's an indicator. We carry it all the time. We've been watching this one for 2 weeks. It's low level, but that government could become unhinged, and the military could start making moves that are unprecedented. And when they do it internally, they really get their neighbors fearing for what the current situation is.
Yep. And it's, you know, we've heard for the last, at least 10 years, maybe longer, that China's going to take over the world. China's going to take over America. They have a lot of their own problems, okay? And this is just one of them. But they have a major demographic problem. Their economy has turned from essentially like a slave labor force economy to almost a middle class. But guess what? When that happens, you can't export as much, and you have a lot of pressure on your currency. And so they're fighting all these other issues inside, free speech, their new social credit score, all that stuff. So I'm not saying America is going to do better than them per se, but if anything, everyone's going to go down in the same spiral. I'm more worried about what things going on here domestically, to be honest, than with China. But everything is, you know, it is a global economy and world, whether you like it or not.
Well, we got a little mob action in the United States right now too, Ben. We got a story out of Portland. A reporter obviously caught on tape getting messed up pretty bad by Antifa, open demonstrations by the anti-fascists against the Proud Boys, and that happened this weekend. We got one guy hurt, sent to the hospital. Low level in its seriousness right now, but it is street violence, and it's pretty obvious. Down in North Philadelphia, several police cars heavily damaged by hundreds, if not a thousand teens just the other night as well. So when masses of teens are running around cities like Philadelphia going after police cars, again, in all three of these cases, all three are very interesting cases on how the authorities are going to be able to respond. China, I would expect that the message to be sent next would be armored vehicles on the streets and actually armed troops on corners as a display of just show of force.
Yeah.
To get everybody to back
you had
down.
Your fun time, you had your little freedom of speech, but now you get time to like come up against the real.
That capability will be flashed as a warning. In Philadelphia, what will that government, local government, do? Will they let four vehicles get damaged? Probably, but obviously, the state of Pennsylvania would surge massive amount of force in there if there were riots. They easily could, the state police, and not if not the National Guard. Out in Oregon, however, we had the police being told to stand down and stay away from interfering in these protests, and basically, you're getting mob violence sanctioned in the streets out in Oregon.
Right. That is pretty scary. Well, I believe we talked about it last week. The Oregon senator. You know, I should have had this teed up before I went into the subject, but kind of had them trying to be defended
by
the militia.
It. We discussed it.
Right, so we talked about that last week. So it's kind of like a dichotomy. It's just like
he's going to shoot at Oregon State Patrol come to bring him to the legislature, and he openly made that threat.
So we got these on both ends of the spectrum. Kind of crazy. There.
It's not necessarily particularly dangerous, and wherever you may be listening to this, it may seem pretty remote. But China in particular is going to affect all of us. And one of those regional ones could spread to your part of the country too. It's a summer where there's protest, potential for riots, and it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah, now, of course, you would think from a conspiratorial and maybe just strategic point of view, next summer, 2020, would be the best time to unleash the real riots and the real action here in America. But all of these things are, some of them are controlled, but some of them are spontaneous. So we'll see how that goes throughout this summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And the impetus for these riots and how it's played by powers that be behind the scenes can only be guessed at. But I would say this, it can happen without any central controlling force either. In the predates my lifetime, but in the 68 convention in Chicago, the Democrats had riots going on all outside of their convention center. And the party inside certainly didn't want that to be happen. They went on to lose the election to Nixon, right? So the if it spirals out of control next summer, it would probably be a pure spiral out of control. No one planned for that to exactly happen.
Right.
If it happens this summer, though, plenty of lead time for media to run on who was at fault.
All right. Over under.
A.K.A. Charlottesville.
Exactly. That's true. That was a big event. That was a trial run, really, to think about it potentially. So hopefully not. But the heat of the summer, you see a lot of this crazy stuff start.
Summer of protest.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, looks like we're coming up on the first break of the night. We got another three quarters of a Patriot Power Hour for you on the season finale here on the July 1st, 2019 edition. Again, be sure to follow us, blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. Just one word. Find all our archives there, Patriot correspondence, the phone number to call in, ways to contact us and ask questions. We actually got a listener question we'll be covering here in a future segment tonight. Looking forward to that. Again, blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. Or simply futuredanger.com. Find the little spot on the page. Like, where's Waldo? Find it. Not that hard. Find our archive. We'll be right back. Patriot Power. Cochran here. Hope you're enjoying the show. Now, here at the Patriot Broadcast Network, we're always doing our best to try to bring you unfiltered grassroots news and analysis. But guess what? We need your help. If you have questions or suggestions, if you want to be a guest or know someone who'd like to share their insights with us live on the air, please do reach out. You can find all of our contact information, social media, at blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. Again, blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. Let us know how we can better our fight against the Bankster globalists and their cabal. We need your help. Again, blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. Or even search Patriot Broadcasting Network on Google and look for our Don't Tread on Me logo. Keep up the good fight.
Stay right here for more of the Patriot Power Hour, the flagship show of the Patriot Broadcasting Network.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
July 1st, 2019, this is Future Dan of FutureDanger.com. This is your segment two, Heat Map News Blitzkrieg, Calm One, which has been pretty quiet recently, as a couple of hot ones. Twitter sets the conditions to censor POTUS, saying that world leaders will now have potentially flags on their tweets if they violate Twitter's rules of community, but they are newsworthy, so they will remain. They're setting the conditions if they wanted to for an election that period shut down to Trump. We got the federal government also discussing the outline of private encrypted messaging. I want to get that into that in the second segment. That would be unreasonable search and seizure in my book. Column 2. We already talked about the Antifa mob assaulting a journalist up in Oregon. Overseas, Syria says 4 killed as Israeli jets hit targets in Damascus and Homs. Syrian, Iranian, and Hezbollah targets were reportedly struck. And there's growing talk, and the surrogates are out there in the media from Israel talking about what a strike on Iran, how it would be justified given Iran's confirmation today that they have breached the uranium enrichment stockpile levels of the previous agreement. They're building the bombs, and the Israelis are now talking about hitting them. Also, over in the United States, Chief Justice forms a SCOTUS majority to forbid the census citizenship question last week, Ben. All right, we got the Supreme Court basically upholding policies that prevent the president, as he's elected, from following through on what he promised to get done. It wasn't a final forbiddance. We'll see other cases rising to that level. And the president very well may get it on the ballot, but on some kind of technicality, the Chief Justice appointed by the previous Republican president shut down the current Republican president. Column 4. News today. New technology may allow the selection of baby gender. Talk about dystopia. It may sound good if parents have the power, but what if it isn't parents with the power? Maybe it's the government with the power to mandate certain sexes be born in their population. We got an insect apocalypse, and we can get into that later in the show too. Bug watchers announcing an alarm. We got mass die-off of many species. All right. Plenty of drought, hailstorm, heat wave, and volcano news as well, all of it low level. And in my partner's favorite topic, column 3, economic security, the zone of true banksterism, got a few pieces of key news. U.S. breaks the record for the longest economic expansion. On the face of it, that shouldn't be on Future Danger, right? That's good news. Well, it is the longest, and all good things must end. Manufacturing hits 32-month low amid weakening demand simultaneously to that. We got a major Korean bank, Ben. You're going to love this. Clamping down on crypto-linked accounts. And we'll talk a little bit about what Bitcoin just went through since the last episode. And Chinese consumers are patriotically shunning all American products. So the trade war rages on. That's your heat map update this July 1st, 2019. What does it portend?
Well, we'll get into the crypto here in a little bit. I don't need to dwell on that right now. I do want to talk about that for sure. But let's see. The insect apocalypse and the bee die-off, that's kind of insidious and very scary. I don't know that much about it. You think we could dive into that one?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a German bug watchers are publishing papers right now, and it's saying that, you know, for almost 30 years, they've been setting up these insect traps around the Rhine countryside and collecting tens of millions of bugs and whatnot. Now they're saying that, there's extinction in Europe. That they can't even catch species that they once had. And just it shows that something in the environment, despite the banning of in most of these modern countries of the worst pesticides of decades ago, the DTD days, that we're still seeing, effects on a mass portion of life on Earth. And they can't really explain how it's so. You don't see that many reports any longer about how wireless cell phone radiation towers have been disrupting insects. And you used to hear about that. And we often see articles now about how 5G is going to be potentially cancerous directly to humans. But the advent of the cell towers, in addition to homes that are radiating Wi-Fi constantly in buildings, could potentially be a cause. This article doesn't claim that. It's a very neutral article out of physics.org. I'm just saying that, without an explanation, it's going to cause, quote unquote, the conspiracies to rise. And it doesn't seem when we get this kind of news that anybody's ever getting to a serious answer to why.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the concerning part. They don't even have. I don't even know if there's like an official story per se. Not that I would trust the official story, but like you said, there isn't one even. It's like really bad. I don't have much background or expertise or research into this topic, but I would think with all the different pesticides and herbicides combined with potentially that different radio frequency, EMF, we also have, we've lost a lot of, our crops are now homogeneous with huge swaths of one crop rather than, very diverse ecospheres. I bet that has something to do with it. So, I remember my high school biology and whatnot. But all that poison, all that stuff has got to do something bad.
So here's how the article concludes. This is their best they can get at the conclusion why some of these little insect traps in the Rhine Valley went from 1994 with 1,300 grams of caught insect down to 400. Yeah. Just a third or less of the number of what they used to have in the 90s. Here's the answer according to this article. It's not very helpful. The main drivers appear to be habitat loss and land conversion to intense agriculture and urbanization, followed by pollution, mainly from pesticides and fertilizers, invasive species, and climate change.
Good old climate change. Good old climate change. Throw that one in there.
I think
pretty much exactly what I said, plus climate change.
I would put my money on the urbanization.
Invasive species, I didn't say that.
The urbanization and the radio frequency a lot of these are entire chains of species, right? They all depend on each other to continue to exist. Yeah. And when some of them get disrupted,
right.
Others go away.
Totally collapse, like, overnight. It's got to be damn near impossible to test this scientifically since there's so many different variables and factors going on. It's not just the 4G, 5G. It's not just Monsanto, Roundup. It's
combined effects.
All these different things combined and climate change, of course, too. Allegedly. Yeah, but.
And like the whole climate change controversy, is it anthropometric? Did man make
right.
it or not? And then is it harmful or not? Two aspects of it that are always being challenged.
And can we do anything about it?
And one can question, is an animal die-off of this type in Europe of all kinds of niche species that don't make it in the 21st century necessarily bad? Or is it prima facie, we hate to see ourselves causing this, but there's no negative effect to the ultimately to life on Earth?
Yeah, well, that'll be like impossible to know, especially in the short term. So we got to assume it'll be a detriment when we pollute our environment. But my question, when kind of getting pragmatic and economic about it, is what is the cost to prevent it? And is it worth the cost? Because if we raise taxes, if every single thing you purchased had a 10% carbon tax attached to it, and some things maybe 100%, like a car, you just paid twice as much for a car, so to try to, of course, encourage people to use public transit, let's just tax the crap out of cars, that may do more damage overall to society than the temperature going up by half a degree Celsius.
Right.
But it's hard. It's hard to tell. I don't necessarily trust most of this scientific consensus.
We're all those small population niche insects and fauna and flora supposed to survive the rise of mankind technologically?
If you watch The Matrix, then definitely the only thing that survives is humans as batteries.
Yeah, only the machines in the end, right?
But I'm being facetious. I don't think we should pollute the crap out of our environment by any means, but we need to be smart about it, and we can't just throw climate change onto every explanation of why the world's ending and that we need to thus support the United Nations.
So switching gears,
okay.
I'd like to come back and cover the Iran-Israeli front and the surrogates I'm hearing on mainstream radio tonight talking
okay.
about what Israel's interests are. They're very, very clear about it.
Okay.
But if we witnessed a war in the Middle East that we – like Israel striking Iran, how would it play out, and how would Israel and the world community bring it to an end? If they struck these Iranian sites, much of that was discussed during the Obama administration before his nuclear agreement, which is now essentially over with. The Israelis had been rumored to have been developing the ability to strike from Azerbaijan and Georgia, airfields in that region of the Caucasus, coming off of the ocean through missilery and or bases in Africa, how their Navy could work in and around the Persian Gulf. These are all little signs. Pay attention to news like that, because if you hear those leaking out, they could very well be just signaling they're getting ready to do something.
Just another thing to watch. We'll do our best here at Patriot Power Hour to keep you abreast of the latest situation. Music is rolling. We'll be back for the second half of the season finale in just a little bit. Do check out our sponsors and, of course, all our social media, etc. Patriot Power Hour. We'll be right back with you.
Folks, here's your chance. The Patriot Broadcasting Network has highly affordable advertising options for you. Our shows and our host websites have a very special audience. These are Americans who are preparing to take care of themselves and their families during difficult times. Start reaching this audience with your product, service, or cause. Interested in broadcasting your podcast on PBN? We're interested in talking to you about that, too. Don't wait. Email info@futuredanger.com for more information.
You are listening to the Patriot Broadcasting Network, sponsored by ReadyMadeResources.com.
Patriot Power Hour, we're back, and we are still live, 7:29 p.m. Eastern, July 1st, 2019, officially the halfway mark of 2019. Pretty ridiculous, pretty crazy. Heck, just seems like we started Patriot Power Hour pretty recently. That was November 2017. It's now July 2019. A lot of things in common, a lot of things not in common between those time periods. But one of them that is in common is the crazy crypto market. Now, when we were starting up Patriot Power Hour, I think, well, you can go to the archive and listen and check the description, but we saw a run up from about 10,000 to 19,000 in just 3 or 4 weeks. And that was some of our first few episodes as well. So go back and listen to those. We were pretty crazy going on.
Well, it was popping last week when we talked.
Exactly. Right? And now we're back to that crazy up and down.
Something like 13,700 around our last broadcast. And you know, we're back to 10,500. But it's popped. But it definitely fell back to the climb we were talking about, excited about last week.
Well, that's the thing. So when we started off Patriot Power Hour, it was going from 10,000 to 15,000 to 19,000. And guess what? From that peak in late 2017, early 2018, about 15 months thereafter, we just had the bear market all the way down, down, down from 19,000 to somewhere in the 3,500, 4,000 range. I mean, we're talking about 80%. And Bitcoin, 90%+ some of the altcoins, some of them just totally disappeared off the face of the earth.
3,300 about there.
3,300 is if you're able to time that low, good job. I was buying during that, but let's just say my average purchase price was above 3,300. So, but the point is, we are now back on that crazy ride, though. And we, like you said, last week, I think we broadcast and we were about 12,500. We had hit it a little bit later, I think on Thursday, actually, one day after our last episode. Hit that 13,700, which is pretty darn close to hitting those all-time highs, especially when we were at less than 6,000 just a few months ago. So absolutely craziness. But since then, just in the last 4 or 5 days, we've seen it cut down from 13,000 to about 10,000. I'm rounding numbers here, but you know, if you bought in at 13,000, you're down 20-30%. This is a pretty wild market.
And this whole crypto phenomenon, Bitcoin in particular, its price hasn't tightly been tied to any geopolitical or, you know, mainstream economic news that I can tell. We talked at length last week and previous episodes about how it's a safety valve, a flight to safety. It could be a place where capital runs when other places get disturbed. But this particular run up and then little bubble and pop doesn't seem to be if you can make sense and see events on the horizon that might send Bitcoin in a direction like you can with gold and oil and other assets like that, God bless you, because I can't see what drives it.
Well, first off, very crazy. I think, obviously, Bitcoin was invented and kind of came out like 2011 or somewhere around there. I mean, we're talking like 7-8 years. Yeah, we need to fact check in here, but I'm telling you, Bitcoin's less than a decade old. It pretty much came out of the ashes of the financial crisis, which in of itself was very recently in like financial history. So very, very young market.
2013.
Yeah. So like 6 years ago, we're talking 6 years old is Bitcoin. Went from, you know, single digits up to 20,000, down to 3,000, back up to 13, down to 10. But unbelievable.
It was like
very young market.
It was like $77 6 years ago.
Okay. So it was, long story short, totally incredible story if you got in early. I got in somewhat early, so I'm pretty happy. But I tried to get in for the right reasons, and we're not going to do a full special this show. I think one of my next specials I'm going to do here on the network will be focused on Bitcoin and blockchain in general. But I think it's just such, first off, it's such a young market. It's hard to tie it to those geopolitical issues. But I also think a lot of markets that are in existence and have been around for a while, like oil or U.S. treasuries, also are kind of, you know, breaking apart from the normal trends and indicators.
Yeah.
You know, inverted yield curve, we've seen that it's pretty much a normal now. It's the new normal to have an inverted yield curve. That used to mean, oh my gosh, the world might be ending here. You know, massive panic. But that's the new normal. Well, we got a young, still trying to figure out what kind of market it is here with Bitcoin and all the cryptos, first off. But really, the entire financial system worldwide is just out of control. Things are not the way they used to be. And so good luck predicting almost anything these days.
Yeah. So what do you make of the news of the all-time stock market highs simultaneous to what is supposedly measured as drawbacks in manufacturing? Are we facing or is that enough news to cause you to say, yeah, we're at a turning point?
I think
is that just noise?
Yeah. It's not all noise when you aggregate it and look at it. You know, it does have some sort of impact. But really, I think, and we've discussed this many a time, what the Fed and other central banksters are doing is truly what matters. If Jerome Powell comes out in a month or two and raises interest rates by 50 or 100 basis points, the stock market is going to totally collapse. But they're not going to raise it. They're probably going to cut it. And that's probably why stocks are going up.
Let me throw this idea at you. This is the 121st consecutive month of GDP growth. And since 2008, the quote 2008 recession, I've long held the view that 2008 recession was stifled or muted is the right word. It would have and should have continued, but for quantitative easing.
Oh, yeah.
So if that thing had naturally progressed, we bottomed out, the pain had been felt, the reset had happened, would the growth we're experiencing now inevitably been the next boom? And the Fed and the monetary planners indeed muted a recession early, and now we're just climbing out of it.
Hindsight's always 20/20, and like I said, with the banksters these days, it's hard to know what's really even going on. But I think it's fair to at least have a thought, you know, to try to war game it and say, hey, if they didn't go through with most, if not all of those quantitative easing and different bailouts, etc., we would have had a very deep tough recession, potentially depression level. But 10 years later, i.e. now, we'd be at the same kind of position in terms of total GDP, but we'd be healthy. It's almost like we went through the fire. We quit cold turkey. We got the drugs out of our system. For that 3 months, we were a total wreck. But now we're clean. We're good.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think the consensus worldwide, multi-generational, is the Great Depression of 29. You'd have to be a stalwart, free market, libertarian adherent to stand up against government interference in the economy if it got to 29 Depression era starvation soup lines.
Right.
That most of our fellow citizens wouldn't stand for it.
Right.
But the problem is that standard has now been elevated so that we can't have a negative quarter growth.
Way worse. This is way, way, way worse.
We have to intervene just to not ever have a negative quarter
growth. Like if everyone doesn't have a new iPhone and a flat screen TV, then, well, most people are too lazy to get out on the streets these days. But if you think about it, we have, not to hijack your point and kind of make the opposite point, but we do have massive amount of bread lines now. It's just the EBT card. So in a way, that kind of depression has been masked and just papered over with Social Security. And so even though unemployment is at a decent level, the labor participation force is super low. We have tons of people on disability, tons of people that just never get out of mom's basement, never work.
So once all the social safety nets that could prevent the starvation in the streets and the mass unemployment were laid in there through the 20s, 30s, 40s.
They've been wasted essentially now and being used up on people that aren't really starving yet. And when it really gets that bad, those will be used up. And yeah, they will still get a Social Security check, but it'll be just at such a devastating cost, probably in the form of inflation. So they'll still get their Social Security check, but it'll be, you know, it'll still be worth $1,000, but it'll only buy $700 compared to what it did 1 year ago type of thing.
But this policy mindset that the elite have had, the international monetary new world order, we say new world order. It was the order that George Herbert Walker Bush talked about after the end of the Cold War, where it turned into this century, into economically at least, using the power of the sovereign state to never have a negative quarter of growth. First of all, I question throughout those 121 months of this expansion, quote unquote expansion, a lot of those were not actually growth quarters. They shouldn't have been. I question whether they measured correctly. They were flat as could be if they weren't.
Right. A lot of them were revised down as well.
But now we're growing without a doubt. And this talk all summer long of the recession's around the corner, it just doesn't match what I'm seeing on the streets. I'm still seeing a lot of jobs wanted ads. I know a lot of people. They're all working. The times are a lot better than they have been 2, 4, 6 years ago. So is this what a massive crisis bubble feels like right before it happens?
So one of my favorite things to do, exactly, it's like once you think it's all good is when stuff falls apart. It's kind of true. It's like when you think Bitcoin's never going to stop going up, that's when you sell some. This is not investment advice.
121 months in a row. Does it ever stop?
I mean, I would just point back, you know what? I mess around and I've created some financial models and whatnot for work and health and my own budget and stuff. And if there were just two variables in this financial model of the American economy, if we just changed, the interest rate from, let's just say 2%, the Fed, let's just say the Fed's at about 2%. If we change that to 4%, if we did that by itself, the GDP would be negative, and so the stock market would take a huge hit just from that interest rate change of the variable within the model. And I had another variable that I was going to change and it was going to totally destroy it. Oh, I remember what it was. We balanced the freaking federal government budget. If we did that, you know how much GDP would disappear? Because we're borrowing all that money. So I agree. Right now,
it's federal spending. Well, the other way you could do is just discount that from your calculation of GDP. The jobs created, when an Air Force base gets constructed, or we buy an F-35 or a new aircraft carrier, take that out of the calculus. You think we're not even at positive growth now?
I'm just saying, if you balance the budget 100% like overnight,
well, you'd have to cut
GDP
that stuff to balance it.
Negative the next year, probably.
You'd have to cut that to balance it.
Right. Well, but they want to cut it, though. Is what I mean.
Oh, they never will.
Right. So, I mean, I guess we are an academic here. But it's like, I don't believe, it's not, in my opinion, a real GDP unless you have reasonable interest rates, and zero, nearly zero interest rates are not reasonable. And when you have an out of control deficit, we, you know, some government spending, I'm talking more of the deficit than just the government spending. I mean, we're just borrowing, and we're able to borrow at such a cheap rate right now, but that won't last forever. And that's not being properly.
Well, if you didn't borrow it, you'd have to tax
either.
It. You can cut the spending, borrow or tax.
And if you tax, you're going to just destroy the GDP. We'll go into free fall probably. If you raise tax, like for example, if they raise taxes on myself personally 10%, then pretty much all that would, that I'd pay for would come out of consumption. So it comes straight out of the private economy, because every dollar of that 10% they'd raise on me, that'd be all discretionary spending. I would just cut back on that immediately.
Yeah.
And that would have a direct impact multiple times over on the economy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if they even barely tweak these a little bit, it's going to have a huge effect. But
so
if they actually do it all the way and as quickly, it would wreck it. So
that's basically why they can't. Don't talk about trying.
Right.
Let me ask you about the interest rate, you know, doubling of from 2.5% to 4%, or almost a double of that. If the Fed raised the Federal Reserve rate and all the banks followed, and that became the actual rate that people borrowed at, you know, widely, or the basis of it, then why would that cut the GDP?
The tide would come out. On all these bad loans that have been made that were super junk bonds that were way overvalued, and now that interest rates have become normalized, all these businesses would fail.
They wouldn't make their debts. They couldn't service their debt.
Yeah, and then there'd just be layoffs and be just disjointed, and it'd just be cascading from there. You know, I don't know how bad and how quickly what the inflection points are, but that's one of the worst things is the corporate debt, but also student loan debt. If you have or home, mortgage housing debt, if you have a variable rate and it went up 1%, 2%, 3% in 3 months, 6 months, even overnight.
It's
you
2008
would,
again.
Yeah, exactly. And we've used up our ammo to kind of rectify that. They've already, you know, used the emergency measures. I mean, they have some more runway. They can go negative interest rates, but that even boggles the mind. Actually, the next segment, real quick, I'm about to get a break. Otherwise, I hit it now. But I had a listener write in and ask about negative interest rates. What does that even mean? And like, explain that. So we'll get into that in a second.
Nerp.
Well, that's what we might be looking at next. You know, the Fed, instead of raising interest from 2 to 4, like we were just talking about, 2% to 4%, and how devastating that would be, it's way more likely they're actually cutting rates, maybe 1.5%, 1%, maybe even if things hit the fan, 0 or negative. There's already $17 trillion. I repeat, $17 trillion in debt worldwide, not just American. That is negative interest rates.
On the other side of the break, you're going to have to explain to me how you can convince people to hold debt that they have to pay to hold, which is what negative interest rates are.
All right. That's what we're
going
to go for. All right, folks. We'll be back for the
they did
final
in Japan.
Segment of the season 6.
Do it in Europe.
And is it coming here in America? Is it already here in terms of real interest rates? That's a teaser. We'll be back. Patriot Power Hour.
Do you want to build a website? Web-based Coding is a leading web design firm building websites since 1998. Veteran-owned and operated, Web-based Coding can build your website. They specialize in WordPress technologies. Develop a beautiful, pixel-perfect website that is stunning on computers, tablets, and phones. Web-based Coding can solve your business problems on the Internet, helping you brand or sell your product or service. This company excels in e-commerce through automation, user-friendliness, up-to-date security protocols, and well-written code. Do you have a WordPress website and struggle with it? Web-based coding has programmers that can fix your site, speed it up, and add custom functionality. Call 239-362-6014 for a free consultation. Get a simple quote over the phone or visit webbasedcoding.com to view their portfolio and 5-star testimonials. Do you want to build a website? It begins at webbasedcoding.com.
achieve situational awareness. Be prepared. FutureDanger.com.
What you gonna do when they show up in black suits on your streets, not mixed boots?
We're back.
We're here.
We're live for the final segment of Patriot Power Hour for season six finale. So, you know, it's a perfect way to end the season. We got a listener question. They wrote in. User. The username C or JCC. Explain negative interest rates. Does this mean you actually pay the banksters to keep your money? And it's just ironic that you and I, right before the last break, were touching on the subject. I'm like, oh, we just kind of like spoiled the listener question. But thanks, JCC. Explain negative interest rates. Do you really pay the banksters to keep your money? And the answer is yes. One way to think of it from a consumer point of view is if you have a savings account and you actually pay a maintenance fee on that savings or checking account. Now, most banks have that, but they waive it if you have a minimum balance, if you have a direct deposit, et cetera, et cetera. But that was when interest rates were not negative. When interest rates truly become negative, you can conceive that those fees will be much, much larger. Or a lot of other terms and conditions. Will they really charge you $5 to keep $100 in the bank every year? I don't think so. It won't get to negative 5%. Really, when we're talking about negative interest rates in Europe and other places, it's like negative 0.25% or negative 0.15%. Like,
right, because how could they take it any further than that and get people to hold on to it?
Because like, they really are pushing the limit. And that's the thing. So America, quote, unquote, the Federal Reserve, if you I don't mean to call it America, they have some runway. Now, at the lowest, they got just a tiny hair above 0%. They raised rates up to, let's just say, about 2.5%. They're looking to lower them again, even without an emergency. That's one thing. Like, if we were having a total recession, depression right now, I don't, you know, you could potentially justify this rate decrease, but they're bringing it down. But once they're out of slack, once they actually go to true negative interest rates, what's going to happen to the world?
And the European Central Bank and the Japanese Central Bank have been here, done that. Their economies have massive unemployment and grind to basically a state enterprise collaboration in those countries keep any exports happening.
You just stall out. Really, the central bank ends up owning a lot more of your debt and economy. That's another overall result. Bank of Japan owns, I believe it was like, gosh, I should have the numbers right in front of me, but it was like a quarter of the Japanese stock market is owned by the Bank of Japan in one form or another. And I mean by like value, not just names. Massive amount of corporate bonds. Of course, Swiss National Bank, you can go look this up, for several years running, has just been loading up on equities worldwide because they can't get any yield in Europe. Because it's essentially zero to negative interest rate. So they have to make bigger risks and put this quote-unquote safe pensions and these safe funds into these junk bonds and these junk stocks that are highly overvalued. And we know where what happens when everyone rushes for the exit at the same time. You know what I mean?
Right. And to my knowledge, there's no equivalent counterculture or dissident viewpoint like we express on Patriot Power Hour in Japan or Europe. There probably are Europeans that in their homes and in their private lives were strongly against all this kind of banking. Probably Japanese too, but there's no voices for it. In the United States, there's mass voices for it. The criticism of Federal Reserve and central banking has gotten out there heavily in the last few decades. I just don't see how negative interest rates could be a policy in this country without really promoting the sentiment that this system can't stand. It's unfair to be making people buy debt and pay, and even if it's the major banks doing it amongst themselves and passing on the costs in other forms, like you said, with fees and other totalitarian banking conditions on holding money within their system. You know, it won't come at you as an interest rate. Like, you know, you lent the bank $100, now you owe them a nickel every month too. Right? You know, they're not going to just subtract from bank accounts. People won't keep their money there.
Well, if you only have, you know, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 to your name, you can keep it all in cash, or hell, you can keep it in some gold and silver, which I suggest, matter how much you have. But if you have a legitimate amount, if you have a business especially,
can't run a business unless you're in the banking system.
$500,000, $1 million cash flow coming in and out, doesn't mean you're making that much profit, but if you're just handling that much, you know, there's no way away to get away from it, really, unless you got some crypto. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, well, first I got to find a way to ban crypto. And they'd have to have such draconian setups where you can't transact property unless it's in the form of accounts that are going to be extracting this negative interest rate against you. And they would federally mandate that no piece of property can transact other than within that system. Probably that would be a way to make it happen here. I can't believe it could stand for long. The government's, you know, Congress, we already see it's clown world. It wouldn't, there wouldn't be people on the floor having actual honest discussions about this.
No way to understand it exactly.
But the pressure on our politicians to not let this continue would be immense. I'd have to think.
Yeah, no, it's, we're going to run into this to some degree or another. We already have historically, I don't know what's in the store, but I do know that they're going to try to crack down on crypto just in general. And when that happens, will crypto outgrow the machine? I think so. But that doesn't mean there won't be growing pains, and there won't be people that are kind of sacrificial lambs too, if you know what I mean. So that's crazy. I kind of going full circle back to Bitcoin and whatnot. I still see it having a lot of potential to go up. But I would be careful to put all your eggs in one basket. I would check out other altcoins to some degree. Personally, I have about 75% Bitcoin, 25% in 5 or 6 other coins. Do as you will. But get some gold, physical gold and silver first and foremost. You know, two things I really don't like about Bitcoin and crypto. You need electricity to use it.
Even have it. If you have no electricity, you don't have it.
No, you have it as long as the network's going and no one's cracked your private code.
Can't do a single thing with it, means you don't have it.
If you are, let's say you were in New Orleans when Katrina hit and you didn't have electricity for a month, but then you went, you know, you got saved or you like went whatever to Texas or something, your crypto would still be there. But if there's a worldwide outage or all of America, might be a little different. But so, you know, physically it's not yours. So I get where you're coming from. But I'm also worried about just where did the internet come from? DARPA and NSA. Crypto is encrypted. That's where it comes from. There's a lot of interfacing that is definitely suspect. Hell, people could just, not your average hacker, but like the NSA as an example, could easily get a keylogger or somehow get into and crack your account. It couldn't crack the blockchain per se, but it could crack your account or your exchange and take yours. And maybe, for example, Coinbase, everyone knows Coinbase is the biggest exchange. If that was hacked, even if Bitcoin, everything else was totally fine, the true network of Bitcoin was fine, but Coinbase was collapsed, you might see, you know, massive selling and just 50, 60, 70% loss in the value of Bitcoin, followed by a massive run back up is what I would expect to see. So a lot of volatility, a lot of things going on. But you got to remember, though, if you don't have electricity, you don't have access to it. And if there's a total destruction of the World Wide Web somehow, then maybe you never would get it back. You know, we got a lot worse things going on, I think, if we lose all internet throughout the world for a prolonged period, or electricity, obviously. But I mean, in the end, if it's on the computer, NSA, do you think they can get at it? I don't know. They may or may not be able to crack the entire protocol. I won't get into the reasons why, but they could definitely crack my account pretty damn quickly if they wanted to. So, you know, nothing's 100% secure.
Let's not invite any of that sort of thing while we're on the air.
Hey, I don't got that much money, so they won't tag me. I have mine encrypted and different, you know, passwords, two-factor authentication as best as possible. So do your best, but I'm just saying, any safe is able to be cracked depending on how much dynamite you want to put on it, but there's not infinite amount of dynamite. So in general, keep your head low. You should be all right.
Yeah, well, it's time now, and as we're closing out episode 61, for me to reiterate a warning that I think is a potential course of action scenario for the anti-Trump forces if they want to make a Hoover out of him,
yeah,
and have
Hoover him.
The next 29 level major collapse, or even something as panicky as 2008, which apparently didn't hurt us that bad after 21 consecutive months of growth since then. But all they have to do is hang a little pain and suffering and losses of 401ks and IRAs around the president's neck up for all time. And, do away with him and his ilk making it to office for at least a few decades. The attempt may come in the next year and a half.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, they're definitely going to blame him when it happens, if it's his fault or not. We'll definitely discuss if and when it happens, but I can certainly see things coming to a head. Hooverville.
Yeah.
Look at all Hoovervilles. We got those nowadays in Denver and San Francisco.
Los Angeles.
All right, man. Well, it's been a great sixth season with you, Future Dan. I'm looking forward to the 4th of July weekend. I hope you are, too.
Yeah. Back Happy soon, Independence buddy. Day.
Awesome. All right. We'll be back sooner rather than later. Keep track of us on social media and throughout our different websites and whatnot. We will announce our next episode and start of the next season. Future Dan, you have a good one, sir.
You too, Ben. Peace out.
I worry that my son might not understand what I've tried to be. And if I were to be killed in Willard, I would want someone to go to my home and tell my son everything. Everything I did, everything you saw. Because there's nothing that I detest more than the stench of lies. And if you understand me, Willard, you will do this for me.
Hey, Ben, the breaker of banksters, Cochran here. Hope you're enjoying the show. Now, here at the Patriot Broadcast Network, we're always doing our best to try to bring you unfiltered, grassroots news and analysis. But guess what? We need your help. If you have questions or suggestions, if you want to be a guest or know someone who'd like to share their insights with us live on the air, please do reach out. You can find all of our contact information, social media, at blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. Again, blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. Let us know how we can better our fight against the Bankster Globalists and their cabal. We need your help. Again, blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network, or even search Patriot Broadcasting Network on Google and look for our Don't Tread on Me logo. Keep up the good fight.